Welcome to Season 6, Episode 20 of RPG Circus, the greatest show in gaming. In this episode, we discuss getting your players to try new things, like broccoli. We also talk about getting your players too many choices, and if that is actually possible.
All right.
Yeah, again, welcome to Season 6, Episode 20 of RPG Circus. My name, of course, is Jeff, and joining me this week, as usual lately, is Ben. Welcome, Ben.
Hello.
And also joining us is a very special guest host, Tristan. Welcome, Tristan.
Hi.
He is living proof that we actually do let our listeners actually in on the show every once in a while.
Yeah, it's not a lie. They do, actually, occasionally once in a while.
So, you know, we're going to break a little tradition and ask you a question or two.
Okay.
And, of course, what we would have to ask you, what is your top three games currently?
Ooh, top three games. Well, I'd say right now, probably Pathfinder is number one, and then D&D 3.5 is number two, and then after that would be Fate Accelerated.
Huh. Fate Accelerated.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming.
I would think that's an interesting mix, and isn't technically Pathfinder and D&D 3.5 kind of the same game?
Well, sort of. I mean, you could make a case for that.
I'm just pulling your leg. I know. So, no, that's actually kind of interesting. That's not the usual mix that I would think of. You know, usually if someone was throwing in Fate Accelerated, you know, because that's kind of a Fate Accelerated is a different headspace.
Yeah, indeed it is. And I mean, we just started running Fate Accelerated a couple of months ago with my group, and I don't think we've quite fully grasped all the rules yet. We're still kind of a little hesitant on how exactly aspects work and how to do compels and things of that nature.
Well,
if
you were my archaeological friends, I would say you haven't been doing enough drugs. Sorry, I couldn't help that. Yes,
it's a very creative system.
A very creative system.
Yeah.
So, well, why don't we go ahead and hit the news? All the news that, as they say, that is new and improved, and most of it, as usual, is Kickstarters. So, but yeah. We do have a few items that are not Kickstarters. The first up is kind of a report from the Roll20 folks, the Ore Group. They released their third quarter RPG industry report. I love how they have an industry report. You know, I don't know why. You know, but they say they have 25,000 games and 15,000 players, which means that every player is playing in at least one or more games, because it's like, are you at least is either game mastering or gaming in more than one game?
Let's examine that for a second. They have
25,000 games,
but they have like 2 million subscribers, right?
And 15,000. Well, they may have 2 million subscribers, but they have 15,000 players.
All right, so they only have 15,000 active users. Okay, that's still a lot.
Yeah,
that is quite a few. I'm surprised that the number of games is almost double the number of active users.
I'm not.
Because, I'm not either.
Because I'm playing right now. I'm playing in one game, and like as a game master, I have a game that's not. I'm not actively having players in. I'm using it kind of as a test bed for stuff, and then I have another game that I'm actually playing, and so that's three games right there.
Yeah, I guess when you look at it that way, yeah, I guess that does make some sense. I'm just thinking about it from my own perspective and how much time I have to devote to gaming recently, and I'm thinking, wow, where do people find the time?
I understand.
Yeah.
And I mean, it doesn't say what the frequency of these games are. They're not some of them are not necessarily every week, or even every other week. They could be once a month. They could be one shot. So
that's true. Yeah,
but they.
You know, I have three active games on Roll20.
Right. Okay, well, there you go. So they released their top. I'm going to give you the top 10 that they list in the show notes. There's a link to the article that gave us this, and then also there's a graphic that I think shows a whole bunch of other ones. But I'm going to give them an order. First up, Pathfinder. Second, D&D 3.5. Third, D&D 5th Edition. Fourth, D&D 4th Edition. That's kind of funny. Number five, Star Wars RPG, any edition. Sixth is AD&D, First Edition and Second Edition. Seventh is Dark Heresy. Eighth is Shadowrun, any edition. Ninth is Dungeon World. And 10th is Warhammer 40K. And because I'm a big Savage World person, I looked, and apparently Savage World is 11th. With they have... This is where it gets really interesting when you look at the percentages of because they break down the percentage of games that it encompasses and the percentage of actual players that are playing it.
Right.
You know, so 1.74% of all the games are Savage World games, with about 4.5% of all the players playing their Savage World games.
Right.
Right. You know. Meanwhile, I mean, you got like Pathfinder, which is like 43% of all players are playing that. Which I'd like to know how they calculate that. That's just really fascinating. It's like same thing with 3.5. Only it. I guess this is ranked by game percentage, not by player percent.
But yeah, the player number doesn't work because it adds up to more than 100.
Well, of course, because that's the percentage of the 15,000 players that are playing those games.
Right, and if players are playing in multiple games, as we discussed, then you know you're going to have weird percentages with that. Yeah,
exactly.
I need to go back to college.
Well, no, you just need to follow, you know, statistics, you know, where, of course, you know, what did Martin Twain say about statistics?
Yeah.
There are lies, damn lies, and then there's statistics. Yes, folks, yes, I did quote Mark Twain. I may have even quoted him badly, who knows.
But, you know, you look at the game numbers, which, at least in my brain, add up to a pie. And D&D, if you add up all four, that's 43-44%.
Well, hell, if you add Pathfinder into that, that's even more.
Yeah, I mean, then you really are talking, that's most of the market.
Yeah, but you know what's interesting, though? You know, Dark Heresy's in there, Shadowrun, Dungeon World, Star Wars, any edition? That's a pretty good percentage. I mean, even Pathfinder, I mean, even though it's only at 1.74%, I mean, it's 11th. That ain't bad. I mean, hell, even 1% of...
You mean Savage Worlds.
Yes.
Yeah.
You said Pathfinder.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We knew you meant Savage Worlds.
Yeah, Savage Worlds.
We knew it. Yeah, we knew it.
You know, I mean, that's still 250-plus games.
Right.
Yeah. Almost 500 games.
That's a pretty good showing.
Yeah, I mean, that's not bad. And again, I mean, out of that, you figured, what's 4.5% of 15,000?
A lot. I was told there'd be no math.
You know,
and my computer has a calculator.
That's that's about 500 some odd people at least that are playing Savage Worlds, and that's just on Roll20. So anyway, it's a very interesting thing. Next up, we do have an actual release. My Zach would be so proud. We're going to talk about Castles and Crusades.
Right.
Trollo Games released via the DriveThru RPG their adventure Hell Rising. Hell as in H-E-L, not H-E-L-L, it's just H-E-L. I imagine that's pronounced hell or heel.
Oh, because they're Vikings?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, some sort of Norse thing going on there.
Yep. So, there we go with that. So, just one of those things. I mean, Castles and Crusades is kind of one of those games that I've never really got into. And a lot of it's just, I mean, it's not bad. It's not a bad game system. I've played an adventure or two, I think.
Is it an RPG, really, or is it more of a combat turn mode?
Castle and Crusades? No, it's an RPG.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it always kind of felt to me just to be sort of another D&D clone. I mean, every time, I've looked at the rules.
Yeah, so there you go.
Interesting.
Yep, so why don't we get into the Kickstarters?
Which are always, all right.
Which are always
all right.
Yeah, I know. Just what we wanted to do. We wanted to spend money. That's exactly what we wanted to do today. First up, of course, is I'm going to talk a little about, let's see, we have the Dark Castle Tile Set for RPGs and Minis. Again, another, these don't actually look too bad. I can't tell. I think they're thick cardboard is what it is. That's what
Yeah, they're
like.
Really. No, they're foam board.
Oh, is it foam board? I didn't catch that in the description. Still, kind of interesting. We've seen a lot of these you know, kind of map related things. You know, I have the blue dungeon tiles, which I think are kind of cool. You have this, you have, I just, you know, I love them all, but at the other hand, on the other hand, I have no time to use them. I'd rather break out my mat and draw it out really quick. I don't know why.
Well, it's just the prep time that is involved with those sort of things. I remember using dungeon tiles, I think, from Steve Jackson Games way back. And I remember all the the players used to say as I was putting down the next part of the dungeon, "Dungeon loading, please wait."
Oh, that's good. They're pretty neat. I like the colors are really bright.
It's weird, but you know what? I don't get this though. I mean, I just happened to pull up the page, and it looks like it's mostly PDF because he had a level that produced actual physical product, but he sold out of them. He only had like three of them. That was kind of weird.
I missed that. Okay,
that's kind of weird.
That's really odd.
I'm no longer as impressed because PDFs aren't that hard to generate.
Yeah. Kind of weird. I don't know what's up with that. But he reached his goal. He was only looking for $100.
Oh, well, there you go.
Okay. So. Well, congratulations.
Exactly. Let's see. What else do we got? We have the Redbach Games Heroic Fantasy Miniatures. Again, kind of, at least they're pictures of what they are looking at produce. Like, these aren't actually greens, per se. I mean, they are, but they're not. I mean, normally.
Yeah, they're impressive. They've already reached their goal.
Yeah, they're... I like them, but again, I don't know when I would be using miniatures again. And how expensive were they? Oh, they still got any number of Cecil funded characters. Put handling only backers can find the price of each miniature. I'm not quite sure how. This one has some funky stuff, but let's see. Okay. So for 40, looks like $45, $55 is where you can actually get physical product. They have some other stuff where you can pledge, but then it's like if you want the figure, you have to add more money.
Yeah.
I have to say, I understand the figures look great, but I think their pledge category thing is a little complex for me. Just me? Just my opinion?
No, definitely not just you. It definitely looks kind of weird, like... pledge at this level, but then buy additional things. But that doesn't count as pledging at another level higher. That weird. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't know. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the next one I got up is the World Spinner Fantasy RPG World Builder and Map Maker. I kind of... Yeah, it's...
I like this one.
Yeah, this one's interesting. It even has some rather... You know, as part of the stretch goals, they have some people actually producing some materials for them, including Wolfgang Bauer of, you know, Cobalt Press. And if they reach some of their other goals, they have some other people. But the only thing I didn't like about their presentation is they talk about this software and there's not a screenshot, or is it in the video? I didn't play the video. Of the actual software, what the interface looks like. You know,
that's that little, you kind of want to have at least a screenshot or something to go on. So, you know what you're looking at. I mean,
right. And
with the kind of software they're thinking about putting together, you know, you kind of want to see what that looks like visually before you pledge money for it, I would think.
Yeah, I got the impression that this must be some sort of web-based tool though. They don't even say that.
Yeah, it is because they have annual membership.
Yeah, there's a membership drive.
It's a hosted service. It's
right,
neat.
Right, and I guess...
Kind of a campaign manager, too. They've got a lot of...
Yeah, I mean, it has a lot of add-ons. I mean, it looks kind of... It sounds cool. I wish there was more... There's some great, you know, there's some quotes from some people that, this looks great, but it's like, well, I don't really see what it looks like or how it works. You know, how do I know? The only interesting thing is I guess they have a printing service too. So it's like, you know, you can print the 8.5x11 maps on your own printer, but if you want some larger maps, they actually have, I guess, they're going to run a print service to do that. So you can make, you know, really larger maps for, of your game world for your yourself.
Well, that would be kind of cool. You know,
It looks like
that's a size map of your world on your wall.
Yeah, 12 by 18 inches, 20 by 30 inches, and 27 by 40 inches.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So, no, I mean, and they, of course, they give you some sample maps, which they all look pretty nice. Okay, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just still not quite sure, you know, how this works. And honestly, I got too many other things going on. It's like, I don't know. It'd be one of those things that I might try, but I'm not.
They made their pledge. It's going to exist.
Yeah, you know, they have it, and it's a Kickstarter staff pick, whatever that means, really. Some guy says, I'm going to choose this one this week. Okay.
Pretty much.
I don't know. Call me wacky. So, all right, next up we have the World Box, a Pathfinder-compatible toolkit. And this is another one. Build an entire game world at a click of a button. You know, kind of.
Encounter generator, treasure generator, city builder, map generator.
Yep. And,
wow.
So right now they are looking at, their various levels. We would add item to.
He only wants $1,000 to make this game.
Well, he's already reached it, which is pretty nice. And I don't quite get what the reward is.
It's a virtual tabletop, world map generator, city builder, treasure generator, encounter generator, NPC generator, character sheet generator. Holy crud. I predict this project will be late.
Yeah. That's a nice way of putting it.
There you go. See, not just my opinion. Wow. You know, actually, the strange thing is this dude's actually in my neck of the woods.
Yeah, I was going to mention that.
Yeah, that's crazy talk.
Should go drop by.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
It's a very ambitious project.
No,
it doesn't say what system he's supporting. I'm guessing it's agnostic.
A Pathfinder-compatible toolkit. Didn't you get that title?
Oh, duh. Yeah. Sorry.
You didn't read.
I was actually reading the text and skipping the titles.
It even says
World Box. There's a problem right there.
Yeah, sorry. Normally I just read the titles and skip the text.
He has a Facebook page, too, if you want to check that out. It says retailer for $30.
Really
so one of these levels must be under $30. That gives you pretty much everything. Looks like $15 or $25.
Yeah, it's not bad, really. I mean, when you think about the pricing, but I'm definitely seeing, you know, something that ambitious being very, very late.
The primary obstacle is to completing this project is scale. The single I've been working on this project, I can only work on in one aspect of time. While it's not much of a challenge, there's just a lot to test. So he's trying to say that he has coded a lot of it. He just hasn't tested it. I don't know. As a coder, yeah. I find that claim to be dubious. Because he says it's not that complex. Well, Yeah. I got some swamp land in Florida that's real seaside property for you. So.
You know, we should bookmark this one and follow it, I think.
It will be interesting. It might be interesting to see how well that goes.
That's what we should do. We should, at the end of the year, we should have a Kickstarter retrospective and go back over the Kickstarter.
Good God, that might take all week.
We don't have to go over all of them. Let's say we each pick one or two and go check on it.
We'll see. Next up, if you're a big Earth Dawn person, there's actually Earth Dawn miniatures that somebody is actually producing. And they're only looking for $2,400, and they're almost at their goals, and they still got a couple of weeks to go. So they have, these are, you know what? I'm seeing a lot of spin resin lately for miniatures rather than metal.
So what is spin resin?
Basically, it's a mold, and you spin, you know, centrifugal force forces the resin into the mold, I guess.
Oh, I see.
So, and it's a resin rather than, so it's a plastic.
Right.
Which I have no problem.
It's easier to get all the plastic than it is metal, you know, for these miniatures.
Oh, yeah. It's cheaper, and honestly, at this point, so what?
Right.
I mean, they look good.
Yeah, they look great.
From the photos that they show, it's just I never really played Earth Dawn, so not my.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Well, I mean, you know,
a mini is a mini, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, a mini is a mini, but you know, I don't know if I know anybody who's ever played Earth Dawn, so
it wasn't on the top 10 list.
It was not on the top 10 list. No. Speaking of not on the top 10 list, the next one up is Chill 3rd Edition, a horror RPG, which is almost at its goal. It was looking for $25,000. It's about $23,000 and some change. And
it'll get there.
It should get there. I mean, it still has 17 days to go. I remember the rule book. I've never really played this game. Have either one of you ever played any of the earlier editions?
No, this is the 3rd edition, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's the 3rd edition. I've never heard of the first two.
Well, there you go.
I think it was mostly a 80s kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that could be it.
So, still, you know, 20
What's
bucks
the rule system? I mean...
The rule system is Chill. It has its own rule system.
Oh, it's not based on... Okay,
Yeah. Back in the 80s, everyone had their own rule system. There's none of this based on crap.
Mm.
So,
just like how we had, you know, Palladium's, Mega System, which really wasn't just a ripoff of D20. It really just was.
Well, come on, let's play some Arduin. not that I have anything against, you know, that. But, you know, $20 gets you the PDF and $50 gets you the hardcover and the PDF. So... Mm. Yeah, you know, it's in line with about most everything else.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, but next up we have our buddy Eloy from Third Eye Games. He's actually trying to do a second edition of Apocalypse Prevention Incorporated. And he's at 3,600 and he's looking for about $6,000. And he has about 23 days to go. And it is a... there's going to be two different editions. DGS, I guess that's the original one, and then there's going to be a Savage Rules version of the same game.
Wow!
So if you're a fan,
I like the art.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I love their tagline though. Join API and defend the world from annihilation between coffee breaks.
that's good.
He knows his audience.
Yeah. He knows his audience. He describes it as an action horror RPG with a twist of humor. So there you go. So hopefully
what good is the apocalypse if you can't joke about it, right?
Exactly. And it's looks like $25 for the PDF and the soft cover for I guess there's a couple of different editions. So, you have some options.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, it really, $25 for both the soft cover and the PDF. So
yeah, well, you know, as people will know, that's my big thing. I always prefer to have both out there. I like having both.
Yeah, I like both too. I like when I'm learning it. I like to have a book, and then after I know it, I just want the PDF.
Well, sometimes it's sometimes it's just convenient to have both.
Well, that too, and I don't know. I'm a really much more of a dead tree guy than I am a PDF guy. But
well, you know, the grand irony is I remember many, many episodes ago, probably season one, season two. I think this was my argument. My argument is that, you know, if you get a hardcover, you should get the PDF. And everyone at that point during that time was always saying, "Well, that's technically not feasible." And funny thing is, there's a lot of companies doing exactly that these days.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's crazy. You know, sometimes you kick yourself because sometimes the only way to actually get both the physical copy and the PDF is to order directly from the manufacturer that way. Otherwise, you can buy the physical copy, but then you have to buy the PDF separately.
Right.
Yeah. Which is a little annoying, but okay. You know, hey, you know, I understand where they're coming from. You know, and because I know a lot of people that actually just buy the PDF these days.
True.
You know, for example, I'll get a hard copy of the core rulebook, but almost all the supplements, PDF it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. So.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's the way it is.
And last up, we have Era, the Consortium, a science fiction RPG game. And the tagline is, an RPG which follows a colony ship far from Earth and the activities of its passengers to establish a new society over 500 years.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, you know, I'm...
That's a lot of structure.
Yeah, I don't think I want to be on the colony ship.
Yeah. I don't know.
Wake me when you get there.
So, and I guess what they're also doing is they're also producing a comic to help explain the setting, I guess.
Well, that might be nice to kind of get some idea of how they intend it to be run.
Mostly, I think it was just more like the setting, what the setting is like, I guess. I don't know. But they've reached their goal. They're only asking for $1,000, and they're over that, and they still got 25 days to go. So, the artwork is not really my thing, but it's not incredibly horrible either.
Well, I like the artwork, but yeah, it's a certain style. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So if you were looking to play a game set in a college ship, maybe this is an option for you, depending on the cost. The 40-page rulebook primer. Yeah. Travel through time. So they have some options for people. So maybe too many options.
It's a lot of options.
Sometimes options is good. Sometimes options is bad. But that's my topic.
That is a topic for later in this episode.
Right. Exactly. That said, we should actually get into the topics. We have two of them, and the first up is happens to be yours, which is getting your players to try new things.
Yeah. So I'm really tired of playing the high fantasy game with magic and swords and all of that. And it's great, but I've been doing it for a long time, and I wanted to do something else. And so I've been trying to get the group I play with to do something sci-fi, and I was really didn't really care what the rule set was or anything. I just wanted to get out of high fantasy and the Tolkien type environment and do something spacey and
or something with mutants. I don't know.
Well, there could be mutants, sure. There could even be psionics, and then you're kind of all back to the magic thing. But we call them psionics, right? How is a psionic fire blast not a fireball? I don't know. but you get to wear a vacuum suit.
And if depending on the game system, the mechanics could be exactly the same.
True enough.
Yeah. That's right. So I absolutely failed. So my point was is that I am a
you failed. You actually approach. Want to announce that in public?
Well, they don't listen to the show, so they. I insult them every 2 weeks, so they don't. So anyway, so what I'm trying to do now is I'm trying to sell it to them, more like a marketing kind of way, and saying, hey, I've been reading these rules, and this is a really exploding dice. This is a really neat aspect of the rules, and I think. There are certain people. So I target certain aspects of the rule system that I'm, trying to migrate to the players that I think would be most interested in that. And
what are you trying to migrate to?
Savage Worlds.
Good choice. My personal. Yeah. One of my personal favorites lately.
We've been doing Pathfinder, for a long time. And it's very rules heavy, as you know. And it's I am really struggling to care what the rules are. I mean, it's beyond knowing them. It just feels like we're getting lawyered all the time whenever there's a dispute. And
it's like you want to hand your players a dollar and says go pay someone who cares.
right. It used to be a quarter, but it's gone up to a dollar. So that's been my frustration, is I've been trying really hard to just get them to change genres. Hell, I'll play Pathfinder Future. I know it doesn't exist, but, if it did.
Oh, I'm sure there's somebody out there that's done it.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Right.
I mean, hell, if if the which edition, I mean, how the D&D had how many editions of sci-fi rules? There was like the Eternity system.
Oh, yeah. Eternity system. There was
let's see, D20 various, modern.
So that was one thing I've been trying to do. So that would be trying a new system, and that hasn't worked very well. But the new one is trying new technology, which my group is actually pretty good at trying new technology. We play by remote mostly, and we try new stuff all the time. We pretty much settled on using Google Hangouts, but we still try. We try go back and try Skype from time to time too, and stuff like that. And we tried Roll 20 twice, and we couldn't make it work for us.
Which parts of it you couldn't make work? That's kind of interesting to me.
Okay, so first the DM or the GM did not way too much front end effort to set everything up. And then the second thing, we had a lot of trouble getting the maps to scale correctly.
Yeah, I actually understand that one. It's almost better to just kind of say screw it, just draw your own maps in there using their primitive draw tools.
Right, but you know, we had these maps either done in other software or drawn by hand, and you know, trying to take a picture of them or export them, and then trying to get them into there and line it up with their grids. We never could make that.
Sometimes you just have to accept close enough.
Yeah. We couldn't even get that. But
no. Oof. Yeah.
It's just rough. But
that's not only Roll 20. Almost any of the virtual tabletops has the same problem.
Yes, that's true. I was not intending to pick on Roll 20.
No. I'm just clarifying that for listeners who might be like, what? Really? Roll 20 has that problem? It's not just Roll 20. It's almost everybody. Yep. So.
Yeah. And before that, we used RP tools, map tools for years also. But it was so hard to get running that we ultimately abandoned it. Once it ran, it was awesome, but getting it to work for all players was always a challenge.
So basically you just kind of use Skype and...
Yeah. Yeah, we share a webcam that's looking at a map, you know, a whiteboard, and we just share the voice part.
All right, that's cool. Yeah, that's good. Sorry. That's not been a problem having them try that, but having them try to do something that's not fantasy has been a problem.
Yeah, that's right. I can't get them to move out of high fantasy into anything else, even modern. Can't even get them to do modern.
Why is that? They just don't, they're not interested in it? Or?
Well, so we have like there's six of us, and we have two people that are really stalwart, don't want to play anything else, and unfortunately, they're the most committed players and the most committed GMs, and so what can you do? You know, they're not going to come on board. It kind of blows the whole thing up.
Oh, so I mean, so you're not running this, or you are?
No, I volunteered to run it so that, you know, they would just have to show up and play, but no, they don't even want to show up and play. And then this actually is a good segue into your thing, because I made it wide open. I said, well, pick any rule system you want, do whatever you want. And then there was too many options, and there was, it was bad.
Well, I mean, I guess the question is that what about a game that's maybe not high fantasy, but a little bit further up the tech chain, but still kind of fantasy?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of as a move measure. I mean, you know, as many listeners will know, I'm a big fan of Solomon Kane.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of has those fantastical elements, but, mm-hmm. you know, but you're using Savage Worlds and you have some technology. So
right.
it's a little up there, you know, but it's still technically fantasy, but it starts getting you a little more technologically advanced, you know.
Yeah, that's definitely a move in the right direction. I mean, another, you know, even slighter move that you could make would be to change sort of the setting of your Pathfinder game to the Eberron setting that came out for 3.5 was sort of more of a kind of not necessarily technological, but sort of like magic, you know, sort of supplanting technology.
Uh-huh.
And kind of being like the alternative source. You had things like lightning rails, which were basically running off of like lightning elementals, and you know, airships that were running off of air elementals, things like that, that, you know, just kind of simulate technology but still keep that fantastical, magical feel.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. What was that called?
That was Eberron. That came out, it was one of the sort of the campaign setting they came out with for 3.5 when that launched back in the day.
Okay. So I can probably get it on PDF.
Oh, absolutely, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because how do you get them to try new things? Like I said, for most of it, it's always been an appeal for me. It's like, you know, sometimes it's just even, you know, depending on which way you want to step. Do you want to try to get them into a slightly different game system first, or do you want to try to get, you know, because I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, that was the great advantage for me, was it's like, you know, I got enough people interested in doing Solomon Kane, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, which taught them, of course, the Savage World rule system, and all of a sudden it's like most of the people I know, they're like, well, I don't want to do anything really. It's like, you know, this is easy enough for me. I don't have to learn a new rule system. Great, we'll play that now.
Right,
you know,
right.
And so sometimes that's really it. It's like, you know, it's maybe they like fantasy, but it's also, it's like they know the rule system really, really well.
Yeah, so, I'm sure that's part of it.
You know, I mean, that I run into that. Hell, I remember being that guy way back. I'm just saying, when I was much younger, when I was a kid, you know, we're talking, I don't know, what the hell was I in I'm going to say the sixth grade. It's like, all I wanted to do was play D&D. I didn't want to play, you know, my buddy introduced me to Traveler, and I didn't want to have anything to do with Traveler, which is funny because I love Traveler.
Right.
Days, I just wasn't ready at that time to play Traveler.
Well, you know, when you're that young, you latch onto something, and if, you know, you know how to make it work and it works, then, you know, if it ain't broke, why fix it?
Right. So.
But it was just one of those weird things. I wasn't ready for that, but, you know, years later, it's like, you know, hell, Gamma World, Twilight 2000, you know, hell, old Cyberpunk 2020 when that came out, or when it was just Cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk 2020. Yeah. I had forgotten that one.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, heck, you know, you pick a game, hell, 2300 AD, which was, you know, originally called Traveler 2300, which had nothing to do with Traveler. You know, take your pick. I mean, I've...
Mega Traveler. Did you try that one?
Mega Traveler. The Price of Freedom, which was kind of a Red Dawn-ish kind of game. So, I mean, I've, you know, it goes along with the whole Twilight 2000 settings that we used to play. Which Twilight 2000 in itself, I mean, God, have you, either one of you ever played that?
No. It had great box covers, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it did.
You know, it's interesting when you read the, if you go back and actually read their fake history. Because it's scary because a few things that they actually list in their fake history kind of happened.
Wow.
You
know? So, you know. Because, you know, they were just, it's kind of scary all around sometimes when you do that. So people just make random guesses like, oh, we'll have this happen. That will never happen. That's completely ridiculous. And lo and behold,
you know,
it happens. But no, I mean, so with new play, trying to get them to try new things, I think a lot of times it's either a matter of getting enough people convinced to play so that the people that are kind of the holdouts will say, screw it, okay, I will. Or, you know, you just have enough people that you can tell them to go.
As go away.
Yeah, pretty much. I like to say go screw themselves, but I was going to do something a little more vulgar, but I decided not to.
One technique that I've done in the past, and this is, you know, purely from a DM, you know, or GM standpoint, is, you know, sometimes, you know, you can force a change, you know, by just taking the campaign in a different direction. I can think of at least two separate occasions where I've done something like that. Now, you know, the players that I had at the time were very, you know, receptive to that kind of thing and were very, you know, open to trying something like that. But
sure,
it is, you know, it is a possibility. It is something that you can do.
You know, that's actually...
And if it ends up that, you know, that's something that they don't like, or, you know, they decide that, you know, they're not really into that, you know, you could always have it be like a dream sequence or something like that and, you know, take it back to the way it was before.
Well, I was just thinking when you were mentioning that, I was thinking of like Expedition of the Barrier Peaks. came to mind, you know, because that was like, realistically, that was kind of Gameworld Spacey in D&D without it actually being Gameworld or Spacey.
Right, that was the crash flying saucer.
Yeah, exactly, you know. So, yeah. I mean, something along those lines, too. You could also, I mean, obviously, if you're playing a fantasy game, you can kind of inch it that way. You could use dimensional travel. I mean, they're in a new dimension. Well, the dimension has technology instead of magic. Ooh, what happens?
Right. Oh, exactly. What is this? This wand of magic missile that only fires 6 times.
Exactly. Very limited shots.
I'm just saying, you know, there are options. I hate using those type of tricks personally, but
yeah, you know, that seems choo-choo, but.
But you know, sometimes
I'm not above it.
But you know, but if I look at it this way, the original DMG had all those weird conversion notes for, like, traveler. I mean, not traveler, but D&D into like Boot Hill and D&D to Gameworld, and I think there was one other. I don't know, but you know, there was all those. You know, because
there was the sort of things in there. There were, you know, stats for like laser guns and D&D and things like that.
Yeah, so, that's true.
So you know, sometimes you know it's okay. It all depends what you're going to do, but
right.
You know, if you can't convince them outright, then doing something that's a step in that direction and just seeing if by doing that they're starting to be receptive to something, then you might be a little better.
Might get lucky, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might, you know, just be the kind of thing that helps, you know, get them thinking, oh, you know, maybe a sci-fi campaign, you know, would be kind of fun.
I'll tell you one thing I did wrong. I did give them too many options when I said, oh, I'll do any rules set, I'll do any, you know, game system, I'll do any genre, as long as it's not high fantasy and it's in the far future, so it could be a post-apocalypse, it could be whatever. And then they kind of went off the reservation.
Oh, they decided to play Bunnies and Burros?
There were 5 different stakeholders at that point with interest in playing 5 different either rule sets or settings, and you know, some of them even were pretty interesting. So that's not a bad segue to your topic about too many options.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Mm-hmm. It's sad. I can tell you've done a lot of project management. Yes, folks, I can tell when we're older people, when we start talking about work-related items, like, oh, who's the stakeholder in this? What is that doing in my podcast? I thought I left that crap back at work, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, that's okay. It's funny because, no, but it's funny because as we get older, I mean, hell, I mean, you talk to Phil Vecchione from Engine Publishing, you know, Gnomestu, it's like, yeah, that's what he does. And it's like, it's funny because, you know, some of his books, he talks about, well, you know, project manager prepared me to really, you know, being a game master actually prepared me to be a project manager. So it's funny. My topic really stemmed from, you know, I actually was, you know, I'm starting to play some virtual tabletops via Roll20. And the one I'm currently in, one of the things that struck me is, you know, it's not a bad game. You know, I'm trying to get used to playing in Roll20. And, you know, obviously it's a setting and a rule system that, It's average world space, so I understand the rules, but on the other hand, it's still a different, slightly different setting. It's right. Using the Interface Zero rule, you know, setting, which our rules are, because, you know, so it's sort of a cyberpunk kind of game, which I haven't done,
right.
And I'm trying to figure that out. But, you know, I don't fault the Game Master 100% on this, because he was just trying to be, you know, hey, you can do anything. But then at that point, it's like, well, what the hell are we doing? I don't know. You know, and I think sometimes we do that. It's like we want to, you know, because we have those games where we want to, as a game master, we want to be open-ended. We want to like, oh, well, what do you guys want to do? How many times have you, as a game master, you've asked players that, and they all look at themselves like,
yeah,
I don't know what I want to do. I think I'm going
to
go,
I'm
going to go scratch my ass for a little while, and I'll get back to you. You know, I mean, sometimes I really, you know, and it's true. It's like even in a game system, even as a game master, as much as you want to allow players freedom of choice, sometimes do you ever feel like we give them too many choices?
Yes.
Oh yes. Definitely yes.
You know,
there's no doubt about this. Yeah, definitely, there are times when we give the players a little too much leeway and a little too much like, well, it's a role-playing game, you can do anything. And you, when you say that, you're kind of opening Pandora's box a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and I also think some systems allow for that more than others. Because there are some game systems that seems a little bit more...
Like Fate.
Well, Fate, you know, because Fate seems to be a little more of a negotiation.
Yeah, Fate's a little bit more negotiating kind
and,
of thing.
And the last Marvel game.
Oh, yeah, the one by Margaret Weiss.
Right,
yeah.
They used Cortex, right?
Cortex, yeah.
You know, so the way someone described that to me, it's like, well, you know, it's like the players get some input and some options, but on the other hand, the game master kind of sets up certain things. Like the example someone gave to me is like, why are you standing there? I don't know. Why am I standing there? And so the player comes up with a reason why he's standing there. So, you know, he has a choice of why he's standing there, but on the other hand, the game master didn't give him a choice where he was standing.
That's true.
So
that's true. Yeah. There is a lot of that, but there's a few times where in that game where players can, you know, spend certain resources to add certain things about the world that, you know, impact the game in one way or the other.
Yeah.
It was the kind of thing where, you know, you could spend a point and Cyclops could blast a hole in the ground, and now all of a sudden there's a hole in the ground, and that's now, you know, something that you can use either as like an advantage or disadvantage.
Yeah, I don't know. But, yeah, getting back again to the topic, was, you know, I mean, and I only say this because it's like, all you know, we were all gathered, the players, so to speak, and I think because it was kind of weird because the last kind of adventure had kind of wound down, you know, whatever they were doing, so it was like we were preparing to embark, and the game master was like, well, what do you guys want to do? Well, I don't know. I'm a new player, so I don't have no effing idea what's going on, so I have no useful input. You know, and, you know, everyone else, I'm, you know, but it was interesting because even the other people were just kind of like, I don't know. And then, you know, the game master has something happen to try to get us motivated to do what I have no idea. And
right.
And even that encounter to me was like, why are we having this encounter? Why, you know, oh, they're trying to take over the bar that one of the other players owns, but it just seems... Seems silly. I don't, you know, sometimes that happens in a game. I've done that.
So it's like, truly an open-ended campaign.
Well, I'm assuming it is. I have no idea. I'll have to play more and let you know.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was about to say one of the things that I personally find when you know, I'm playing and a DM says, well, what do you want to do to me? You know, in that sort of way of like, well, you know, what is, you know, it's at best at that point to kind of, you know, think about it from a character standpoint and think to yourself, okay, well, what would my character realistically be doing at this point in time? However, I found sometimes that can derail a game faster than anything else.
Yes, because my character to be at home reading a book. I mean, that's not that exciting.
Right, exactly. Or, you know, or Mike, you know, my whole character's whole, you know, thing is that he needs to go find revenge on the person who killed his parents. And so,
you're looking for the six-fingered man,
and
I guess.
All the PCs are doing something else, so.
Yeah. Well, you know, because the other... it was definitely one of those things. What was I thinking? I had a point, and now I can't remember it.
welcome to older age.
yes, older age, where my neurons are not firing as fast as they used to.
Mm. Well, they're firing just as fast. It's just more diffuse.
No.
They hit it in more obstacles. yes, you know, they don't pick up that in my biometric screening at work.
No, we run a lot of open-ended campaigns,
and it's really
a challenge because they're very hard to start because of exactly what you said. They, without some agreed unifying factor, there isn't one. You know, if every player does what they think they want to be or want to do, and, you know, in that initial context, there's generally no reason for them to come together other than, you know, to make money and go up in levels. But even that, you know, why are you doing that?
Well, you know, what I think is interesting, I was just thinking, you know, I mean, we talk about opening a game, and then we talk about the, you know, which is what I was thinking about when you mentioned it, I was like, damn, that's the word I was thinking about, like when I was thinking of this topic. I couldn't think of the term, which is funny. It's like, okay, really? I can't think of open-ended up. But, you know, and kind of the answer to me has always been the closest thing to an open-ended campaign that I've ever done is kind of like the weird, like, sandboxy type campaign.
You know? Yeah.
And sometimes I think, you know, when people say, I want to run an open-ended game, what they really mean is I want to run a sandbox campaign that has a whole bunch of options that the players can do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because
to me, the classic example of the sandbox is what? What's probably the most known, probably best example of a sandbox adventure ever, as far as most people are concerned? Come on. All right. I'll give you two hints: the letter B and the number two.
B2?
Keep on the Borderlands.
Yes. That's a module.
Module, but it is a sandboxing module. I'm thinking, you know, more later on, but I'm thinking more, you know, that the first module there for the Kingmaker adventure path for Pathfinder, very much in that same vein.
Right, but I mean, you know, most people use B2, the Keep on Borderlands, as a good example of what a sandbox really can do, or what you can do with a sandbox.
Right.
That's like one of the original classic examples, and some people actually can still consider B2 probably the world's greatest module ever made.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's darn good.
You know, and because it is. I mean, you look at it, and it's just like, what do the players want to do? It's like, you hear about all these things you can possibly do, and you choose to do or not do them, depending.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess that's it. It's like, you know, for me, it's like, I think you can give players too many choices. And sometimes it's just, you know, if you just say, what do you want to do? Rather than saying, you know, even if it's 10 things, which is, to me, way too much, you know, 5 is a good number. Hell, 3 is a better number. But
3 is a much better number.
You know, you can do A, B, or C. And, you know, if they think of D, and it sounds good, I say go with D. But I'm just saying, you know, if you give them only a few options, I always find that the players will come up with a couple options of their own, and sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. But, hey, at least that's not as bad as, well, what do you want to do today? That's almost like, that almost reminds me of, you know, like you go over to your friend's house when you were like, I don't know, 10, and you're like, what do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? You know.
10?
What was that?
10? That was what we were doing when we were 20 in college.
Well, you know, when you're 21, you can go like, fuck it, we're going to go to the bar. Okay.
Right.
But I'm just saying, you know, I mean, that's kind of, you know, and I think we get that option paralysis, you know, when we get all those things. I mean, that's just me. I mean, I'm sure some of the listeners out there will probably have different opinions, and I'd love to hear them. You know, I'm always a fan of that. It's like, if you want to tell me I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. I don't care. I'll say, okay, fine, and I'll have another beer, and I'll move on.
That's right. That's the way to be.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep, exactly. There's a reason that, anyway. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. It's just one of those, like I said, it's one of those things where, it kind of bothered me, because I'm thinking, you know, it's almost like he wanted to give options, but he didn't really want to give options. You know, It's like, I'm sure there's something, a direction you kind of wanted the story to go into, but unless you know, it's like, I'm a new player. I don't know what the hell's going on. Unless you give me a clue, it's like, here's $1. I'd like to buy a clue, Pat. You know, or something. Buy a vowel. I'd like to buy a vowel, you know?
Yeah, no, it is kind of frustrating in those style games where, you know, it's too open, you know, and as a DM or a GM, you kind of have to be mindful of that. And if your players, you know, kind of seem like they're meandering or if they're lost, you kind of have to, you know, be the person to kind of, you know, go out there and be like, all right, well, here's, you know, like 3 things that, you know, you could be doing at this point. You know, which one of them would you like to do? And you're right. You know, once you start giving them, you know, ideas, then they're going to start thinking of ideas of their own, and then they're going to start, you know, running the way that they want to go.
Screw that.
But sometimes you have to give them that little spark.
Exactly. No, I just, because it's like, it's just kind of like I said, it's always that thing. It's like where you say, well, what would you like to do? And you're like, I don't know. Do I, you know, it's like, you can't think of anything. It's like, if someone gives you options, you're like, I don't want to do any of those. You know what? I'd rather do X, Y, Z. Somehow, right. it's like a trick of the mind.
Right.
So.
Right.
Well, I think I beat that topic pretty much to death.
Yeah, I think you won.
I won?
Yeah. You succeeded.
I succeeded. Yeah. Wow.
You have proved to me that you should just give them no options.
One option.
It should be the illusion of choice, but really there's only one option. And no matter what they choose, it's door number three.
What the hell is this, Soviet Russia?
Yes. Yes.
Comrade. Yes.
I am your benevolent dictator.
You may
have any color you want, so long as it's gray.
So apparently in Soviet Russia, option chooses you.
Right, that's right.
I'm joking,
of course.
I don't know. I wonder if we have any Russian listeners. That would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
If we find out. You know what? If we do have any Russian listeners, I got news for you. We kid, and on the other hand, I also have been to Russia.
Really?
Yeah, actually, went back when it was the USSR.
Oh. Wow.
But it wasn't Moscow. It was Vladivostok, which is their eastern seaport.
Oh.
So
Navy?
What was that?
You were in the Navy?
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
Yeah, the ship I was on and the other ship that pulled in, we were the first U.S. warships to pull in there in something like, you know, since like 1945 or something like that. It's like over 40 years, something bizarre like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was pretty interesting. I got to meet guys that, you know, they fought in World War II.
Wow. And
that's
like,
cool.
Yeah, it's like, we remember when we were on the same side. Oh, okay. it's fascinating, you know, and it's like, it was fascinating because at that time, Gorbachev was still in power. If anyone who knows, for those of you who know who that actually is.
Oh, yeah. Good old Mikhail. Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, because, you know, some of our listeners might be young enough that they're like, who the hell was Gorbachev?
You know, he's the guy at the beginning of Naked Gun, the first one.
With the grease spot. Right?
Yeah, the grease spot on his head.
But it was always funny because I always tell people, it's like, it was funny because like Gorbachev was in power, and then all of a sudden, everyone that you would talk to, they really wanted Yeltsin in power because they thought he was going to be more progressive.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I've forgotten that.
That's true. Yeah.
So, and I remember, you know, it was illegal to drink in the square, but people were doing shots of vodka out of those telescoping glasses.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you know those little plastic telescoping things, you know, you used to take camping cups? They were doing shots of vodka out of those things in the public square. It was really hilarious.
Wow.
You know, I remember going to what passed as a department store, and it's just like, looking at stuff that looked like 1950s electronics.
Wow.
You know, I mean,
yeah,
it was just that weird disparity, you know, it was, I always tell people, it's like at least Vladivostok when I went and which was what in 90, it was before the first Gulf War, right before the first Gulf War. So it's like,
that would have been 91.
Yeah. 91.
Yeah.
And I always tell, you know, it's like, I told people, I said, it's funny, it's like being there. It's like, if it wasn't for the Russian speakers, I would swear I was approximately in 1950s U.S.
Wow.
That was kind of like the weird, like, feel of, like, the vehicles and the clothing, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not 100%, but that's really
kind of. No, I know what you mean. That's what it reminded you of. Kind of like Cuba.
Right. Well, you know, so it's fascinating. So, yeah. So for those of you, you didn't know you were going to get a kind of sociological, geographical lesson today, did you?
No, they did not.
So.
No, they had no idea.
Yeah.
That is just the special that is this rocket propelled grenade podcast.
Rocket propelled grenade podcast. I like that, you know. Yeah, you know. Made by the Russian student. No, sorry, I was just thinking of Twilight 2000 and all those damn
rocket-propelled grenades.
Yep. See, that's how my mind works, folks. I'm just really way out there. So, all right, well, I think we're going to go ahead and close this episode, and we want to thank everyone for listening. Of course, thank you, Tristan. If you want to go ahead and...
Absolutely.
Yeah, what was that?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you guys for having me.
Oh, you know, it was our pleasure. I'm glad you were able to come on. I mean, it's always fun. It's much more fun with three people.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, it does seem that way.
Oh, because otherwise, you know, me and Ben were a little more alike in mind, I think.
Yeah, we agree too much to be entertaining.
Oh, well, there you go. You need to take that point from this guy.
Right, and I end up being like, Ed McMahon. Oh, that's right, Johnny.
Hey, at least I haven't pulled out the hat and claimed to be Carmack, so. I think I've really lost a few listeners there.
They really don't know who Johnny Carson is either. So.
Oh, that's sad.
Johnny Carson? Did he say Carson or Chad?
Johnny Cash? No.
Although, hey, I like Johnny Cash too.
No, I do too. But, so. You
know. All right,
we digress.
We digress a lot on this show, but that's because we enjoy doing it. We have fun.
That's right. That's why. Right.
Because honestly, I don't ever want to do a podcast where I'm just going through the motions and I'm not having fun.
That's right.
So. Sense. That said, if any of you people wish to say anything to any of us, you can, of course, do it in a variety of ways. Number one, of course, is you can send us an email at info@rpgcircus.com, and that will get to me, and I will forward it on to everybody so they can peruse it, and we can read it on the air, maybe, and actually do pretty poorly at it, and we'll go ahead and reply that way. You can send us... a comment on our Facebook page or our Google Plus page. If you just search for RPG Circus either on Google Plus or Facebook, you will definitely find us. You can go to our RPG Circus homepage, and of course, on every time we release an episode, there is the comment section there. You can use that. Depending on the comment, I may either answer it there or we may go ahead and read that one on the air and answer it on the air. And of course, my favorite thing to do is, of course, send us a voicemail. Some sort of voice message, and you can do that either through our SpeakPipe application, that's either on our Facebook page or on the RPG Circus homepage. There's a little thing that says send us an audio comment, or if you go to the Facebook, there's a little link on the side for the SpeakPipe application. So that there are those options. And hey, you know what? I'm opening my drawer right now, and I still actually have, I don't know, let's see, what do I got? 50, 60 or so stickers. And if you want some, shoot us an email, and I'll go ahead and be more than happy to send them to you. And yes, I do send them outside the U.S. via the Fun Airmail, which is actually pretty cheap. You just have to send me the address to send it internationally, because as an American, of course, I'm a little bit of an idiot, so I can't figure that out.
Right.
Hey, I'm only
honest. If you want them, you should help us as much as you can.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And, of course, again, we thank Tristan for coming on. And if you want to take his seat sometime, go ahead and shoot us an email. We'll be more than happy to see what we can do about fitting you in. So, any other things before we shuffle off this episode?
Happy fall.
Happy fall.
Uh-huh.
Happy fall.
I think fall was a while back.
Well, I'm catching up, There's leaves are turning in Virginia, so... Yeah.
Well, we're not getting that so far here in the fine state of Arizona.
Unless cactuses are still green.
Actually, that's not entirely true. If you head up north, which I actually was up north this last weekend.
Yeah.
We do actually get some color change on the mountains and the trees, and it's starting to get cooler. So I actually went to the north side of the Grand Canyon, which I had never been to before.
I've flown over it many times. I've never been to the Grand Canyon.
Oh, okay. Well, it's something that, according to Theodore Roosevelt, everyone should see at least once.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah, he was a big proponent of the canyon, by the way.
Oh,
yeah, it's cool. It's a big hole. When you fly over it, you can't miss it.
A buddy of mine...
a long time to fill that in.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny, a buddy of mine, his ex-wife, somebody I knew in the Navy, His ex-wife, he says, I went to the Grand Canyon. I was like, look how beautiful and majestic is it. And she was like, it's a freaking ditch. Let's go.
Wow.
It's like, oh, no wonder she's your ex-wife.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
So, all right. We've just insulted a few people. So, all right. Well, thank you, everyone, for going. And for going. Where are we going? Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will see you guys in about 2 weeks, and Maybe we'll do something a little more, since it is October, and 2 weeks will be right before Halloween. Maybe we'll do something a little more Halloween-themed.
Ooh, yeah, that's I agree.
That's an option. Sometimes I have ideas at the end of a show, and I have to remind myself to speak them, otherwise it may never happen.
We should have a horror-themed episode.
Oh, well, horror? What are you talking about my ex-wife?
Oh, I have one of those, too. Be careful.
See, I'm on a roll today with the ex-wives. I don't know what's up with that. So.
Did you just write an alimony check or something?
No. All right, everyone, have a wonderful 2 weeks, and we will see you then.
All right.
Later.
RPG Circus is released on a Creative Commons Attribution US License 3.0. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.